Hello, and welcome back. This is James McCanney sitting in for Daniel Brigman for the Power Hour here on July 2nd, 2020. And I'm talking about food today. If you missed the first hour, go back and make sure you listen to that. Excuse me, because this is a two-hour segment that's dealing with a very important topic. This segment, I'll be talking about grow lights and some of the specifics there, talking about logistics, food waste, and quite a few other topics, food storage, and some specifics about types of food that are very healthy and basically rudimentary foods that you should have a quantity of. So, anyway, going into the idea that, first of all, I missed the container topic here. This is very, very important. Containers. Now, if you go to the plant store, you go to the greenhouse to buy plants, of course, you have the full variety of containers. And so container growing is something that everybody should also look into. For example, things that don't grow in a grow tower like potatoes. For example, you can grow in containers. And you can go online. There's quite a few good videos online dealing with growing, for example, potatoes in containers. And this is a thing that I learned when I was younger, taking car tires. Excuse me. I hope my voice lasts through this whole hour. But you take car tires and you take the first car tire, you put it in your garden, you fill it full of dirt, and you plant potato seeds. Potato seeds are where you let the potatoes' eyes grow out and start sprouting, and then you cut them into pieces, you let them dry, and then you plant them. And the sprouts become the roots and the branches, etc., and start the potato growing again. And so what happens is once the new potatoes that are growing start to emerge from the dirt and you can start to see them, you take another tire and you put it on top of the first tire and you fill that with dirt. And that's all you do, besides water, of course. And when the potatoes start to grow to the point where they filled up that space and you start to see them growing, poking through the dirt on the top of that dirt in the second tire, you put a third tire. And you can do this up to about six tires high through a growing season. And then when the potatoes are fully grown, you knock over the pile of tires and all your potatoes are there. Very easy to get to. You don't have to dig holes or anything. So these are a couple of the simple ways of growing things like potatoes. And then also carrots, all kinds of other crops that don't lend themselves to grow towers, you can grow in containers in very concentrated areas. So, the container material is very interesting. There are new efforts to build concrete containers, and one example is called Hycrete. It's an example of a type of concrete that is water, it is resistant to water. In other words, water doesn't soak in, and you're not leaching also all the chemicals out of the concrete into the plant area. So, but container growing is something that's very interesting. It's a way to supplement the leafy greens that you grow in a vertical system. And, of course, selecting the type of containers and the size that's right for you. So it'd be nice. In fact, if you started today, we're at July 1st, amazing date in this year, halfway through the year right now. But if you started right now in any northern climate in the United States with a container garden of potatoes and carrots and other things like that, by the time fall rolled around, you would have your winter supply of potatoes. So very important. And you can start potatoes from typically any potatoes you buy in the store. And you might be able to buy potato seeds, etc. But that would be a good project. And I'm really encouraging people to get ready for this winter. I think we're heading into some really crazy times, and that's why I'm doing this show about food. Because number one, you need food. You need air. You need water. You need heat. You need energy. You need all those things. But you're not going to go far without food. And procuring it, if things get really crazy and the food transportation system shut down, you're going to be in a world of hurt. So, you know, it's time to start taking care of yourself. Okay, so that's just a little side topic. Containers and the container growing is actually the term. So jumping off to energy, food production and water production require energy. And that's one of the things when I give a lecture on water, something that I am in that industry, actually, I always say that whatever you do with water, it takes energy. If you want to do reverse osmosis or even water filtration. And a very interesting fact is that there's three main product lines that I have to deal with water. There's filtration, there's reverse osmosis, and then there's water from the air machines. But in terms of energy, filtration takes the least amount of energy. It does not take much energy to pump water through a filter. So if you have a reasonably clean source of water, even wastewater, you can filter with not too much problem and get everything out of there so you end up with clean water and a relatively small amount of energy. To do reverse osmosis, it takes about 10 to 20 times as much energy per gallon of water to do reverse osmosis. The other problem with reverse osmosis is you take all the minerals out of the water. And so you end up with a water that's like a vaporized water, and so but it takes about 10 times as much energy to do reverse osmosis as it does filtration, and then again it takes another 10 times as much energy to extract water from the air. But there's some places where water from the air is the best solution. That's about 10% of the solutions worldwide would come down to extracting water from the air. But it's very energy intensive. And it's something, by the way, if you're familiar with my background, I was awarded an X Prize 2 years ago for creating a system with my wing generator for energy and the atmospheric water generators. I was awarded the X Prize 2018 Technology Innovation Achievement Award for my system of using renewable energy from the wing generator to power the atmospheric water generators, producing 2,000 liters of water per day. So at any rate, but that's a solution that's maybe less than 10% of the world's solutions for water would be from water from the air. But it's very energy and intensive. And but clean water is very essential. But it requires energy. That's the point I'm trying to make. Also, regarding agricultural in agriculture, whether it's indoors or outdoor, energy is one of the prime movers that make all of this happen. And I'm just going to take a little side note here that electric tractors, not that you're going to go out and buy a tractor, but when you start talking about modern agriculture, the big move of large-scale farmers is to electric tractors. And it's just like electric transportation. It's said that a person under 10 years old today will probably never drive a petroleum-based car. That's how fast the industries are moving towards electric transportation. But as I said, where's all this electrical energy going to come from? The central power company certainly can't do it. They can't deliver the power they're supposed to deliver now. PG&E, Xcel Energy, these companies are burdened with nuclear power plants, etc. So where's all the energy going to come from to power the tractors and to power the lights for the agriculture of the future? Well, there's only one place. It's not going to come from solar, I guarantee you that. Solar is kind of a nice, profitable industry, especially with government subsidies, if you live in Arizona or New Mexico or California. But other than that, there's really no market for it. There's no purpose for putting solar panels because you get so little sun. And if you want to extend that power through the rest of the day, you have to buy this immensely expensive power battery pack. So the wind, it turns out that the wind is the only real solution to driving our energy future needs. And once again, the wind generator is light years ahead of anything that's ever been produced in the past. But energy is essential to agriculture. It's essential to water. Okay. I'm going to talk about grow lights. There are different types of grow lights. My experience, the least expensive are fluorescent lighting, and they work good. Fluorescent lighting has been around for decades and decades, probably longer than that. The original fluorescent lights were not that good relative to growing plants. So they redesigned them to be, to put out a spectrum that's similar to the sun. And so with the nice thing about fluorescent lighting is they don't create a lot of excess heat. That excess heat is wasted energy. And typically in a grow area, you don't want a lot of extra heat because it's already warm. It's an area that, you want at a certain temperature, but you don't want tremendous amounts of heat, which then also would dry your plants out. So fluorescent lighting to me is a good way to go. Another good form of lighting, which costs a bit more, is the LED lighting. LED grow lights are on the market. They're a bit more expensive. They're very reliable. They're, once again, they don't produce a lot of heat. And then there's the, I think they're mercury halide lights, I believe they're called, but they're they produce a lot more heat. They're much more energy intensive. They take a lot more energy. And so those are the typical types of lights. And the nice thing about fluorescent lights is especially if you have a grow tower, you can surround the grow tower with three or four long tubes of fluorescent lighting and cover the whole column of plants. And of course, it's on a timer so that they go on and off by themselves and very efficient in terms of electrical usage. But still, the whole industry is going to have to adapt to alternative types of energy to grow the plants, especially the massive amount of growth that's going to have to take place to start feeding the United States. And of course, if you look at the traditional places like California, they're having problems there. The San Fernando Valley, where a lot of the, 25% of the fruit and vegetables of the United States are grown, because they're depleting the underwater ground water tables, the land is sinking. And not just a little bit, it's sinking a lot. And so they're literally pumping out the water that is below the valley, and eventually that's going to run dry. So it's something that with massive amounts of agriculture, any type of agriculture on that kind of a large scale is going to go dry, and that's what's actually happening. And by the way, we don't have any Department of Food or, you know, any government agency that's really looking into this. So this is all happening by private entrepreneurs, and possibly that's a better solution because if there's a need, they'll come along and fill the gap. They will come along and innovative minds will create the products and the supporting products that make agriculture and food available to the public. And like I say, a lot of these people are young. I'll just quickly mention, I'll mention some phone apps that have been developed for logistics, etc. But back to energy. Energy is probably the biggest issue in agriculture. You know, you talk about seeds, you talk about water, you talk about growth systems, etc. But without energy available, none of this is going to happen. Okay, so that's for indoor growing, outdoor growing, etc. I'm going to move on now to the topic of logistics, and this is huge. How do you operate the farm, get the product harvested? How do you get it to market? How do you get it to the customer? And the trend is towards smaller farmers. And so a number of weeks ago, I believe it was on this show and probably my own radio show, my Thursday evening commercial-free radio show, I talk about the trend of people moving from cities and buying a small farm, 5 acres, 10 acres. On 5 acres of land, if you have a garden, if you had a 5-acre garden, not only would you feed yourself, but you could probably feed about 20 other families with that much land, with good growth practices, organic, etc. So a 5-acre farm, you could have chickens, goats, maybe one cow, and a fish pond that would be a 3-season fish pond or maybe even 4 seasons, a greenhouse where you would have more intensive growing. You might have a cold cellar where you can store products, etc. But a 5-acre farm with it properly managed, you could have your own little woods with wood source, so you could have wood heating. And by the way, the other thing that's coming along, especially for the northern climates, just jumping back to the concept of energy, is heating your house from the wind. And that's one of the byproducts that I'm selling, is electric furnaces to take electric heat and turn it a wind energy and turn it into heating. So on that cold winter night when the wind is blowing like crazy and you don't have any lights on, you could be turning that wind into heat and offsetting your heating bill by a considerable amount of possibly reducing it down to zero. So at any rate, energy, once again, that multiplicity of uses of energy is very important to the small farm. But my point was, regarding logistics and the trend being towards smaller farms that concentrate on, say, one particular cash crop, or one or two possibly, and then getting that to market. So there's a young fellow, I believe I saw this on one of the advertisements. It's a phone app. I'll tell you what it is, a little free advertising here for this phone app, but it's called foodshed.io. It's a phone app. You can download it on your phone. And what it does is you can locate local small farmers. So farmers register with this app, and then you can order your food with the app, and then it'll in some cases even be delivered to you, to your door. And it's typically at a lower price than you would pay at the grocery store. So anyway, have an example of a person who was in the phone app business using social media to supply restaurants with clients. It's connecting restaurants and clients. So these kind of applications are going to make the logistics of farming and getting that product directly to the customer much easier, a much more fluid system. And that is essentially, because back in the old days, what did you have? You had the farmer's market. Well, you know, that's good, but you're reaching a very limited number of people. You got to get in your car. All the people have to bring all their produce to the farmer's market, hoping that they'll sell that produce in that day, and they probably won't. They'll have leftover. There's waste. And then the people that are buying have to get in their car. They got to go to the farmer's market, buy, then drive home. And it's a relatively inefficient process of the logistics of distributing the food from these farms. So what would it be if the farmer never had to leave his farm? The product sale come in through this phone app. He gets the order. They hand it off to somebody that in a very efficient, maybe electric vehicle, or maybe even a drone someday, flies this over, drops it off at the customer's house. A minimal amount of electricity used to deliver the product, the farmer sells it for less, but makes more money than he would have sold if he went to the farmer's market. Doesn't have the time or the overhead expense of going and being at the farmer's market. So anyway, back to this term logistics. How do you get the product from the local small farmer to the customer? And that's being addressed once again by private enterprise, by innovative young people that saw a need for something. They're making a profit. They're going to make a little bit of money off of this. And by the way, they're using blockchain. Blockchain is another method of commonality between, say, energy suppliers or food suppliers or other types of suppliers. I have about a minute here before the upcoming break, but I just want to tell you a story about warehouses. The warehousing industry in the United States, you would think that during this coronavirus, all industries are going away. No, what they're doing is they are adapting to the coronavirus world, and they're starting to build warehouse space or occupy warehouse space so that they can build up their product and sell it online and deliver it through standard delivery processes, UPS, FedEx, etc. All of this has continued in spite of the coronavirus. So the whole industry, the idea of having a downtown store, and I have some theoretical ideas on that also, why they allowed the New York City to be burned, all those big stores, because they knew that they were in for retail bad times, and they just let the stores burn. They can collect insurance and maybe some government money, some subsidy money. But the retail business, as far as people going to stores, has converted to online ordering. So we're heading into the break here at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
On to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
What in the world is this crazy Willard water?
It's a proprietary solution, and it's a water additive that was invented by my grandfather, Dr. John Willard, and hence the name Willard Water. Boosts a number of different things. We see most prominently that it's increasing the absorption, utilization, and storage of nutrients in the cells. So, for example, if people were drinking, we see a big boost in B vitamin absorption utilization. If you see it in plants, we see a big boost in their ability to absorb and retain fertilizers or nutrients in the soils. I think we see with things like microbes. If you used a microbe on soil, for example, to replenish the soil, and you sprayed our Willard water on it, go through that replenishing cycle much faster.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com.
That's theparamol.com.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food and storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high-fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made. Good for you. Food stores I love to eat. Yum!
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
And welcome back. This is James McCanny sitting in for Daniel Brigman here on this July 2nd, 2020, on the Power Hour show. In the last half hour here, I'm talking today about food. And so a very important topic. I'm going to start out with a topic, specific foods. For example, there's something that is called Ezekiel bread. And so if you look, this is a sprouting bread. It's an old, from the Holy Scripture, from Ezekiel 4:9. And it consists of sprouting wheat, barley, and beans, and lentils, millet, and spelt, and it also can contain some other things. But basically, if you eat this and only this, you would have enough food to sustain yourself. So sprouting is a very important part of growing your own food. Very important. And so this I talked about long decades ago, possibly on my show, and I had a big reaction to this. In fact, there were times when I sold things, food products on my radio show, my own show, that were, for example, back in the day, this was around the Iowa flood time back in, I can't remember what year, maybe 2009 somewhere, excuse me, in that time frame. But I had located a pallet of organic non-GMO corn. This was called Dent corn. And when I got a hold of the, I was talking to this food distributor in Iowa, and he, all of these fields of Dent corn had been destroyed by the spring flood. And the only seed that existed from this whole project that was done as a joint effort between the University of Minnesota, University of Iowa, University of Wisconsin, and some other professors, they were in the process of growing enough seed in these three states where they could convert a large portion of the United States corn crop to this non-GMO corn. And the spring flood just wiped it all out, and there was one pallet left. And I bought the pallet. I bought the pallet from this seed distributor in Iowa, and I said, well, you know, I can't let this just, he was going to turn it into feed. And I said, no, you can't do that. So I took it and repackaged it into packages of 250 seeds. And I forget, 1,000 seeds, and I forget what I was selling. But this stuff sold all over the world. I couldn't believe it. People bought this. And then the next fall, I started to get the pictures, and there was a woman from Idaho that sent in a picture of the corn that she had grown, and it was immense. It was huge. And they had all of this corn that was growing. So the that was an example of how I value things like grains and et cetera. But now that food, that seed has been propagated around the world, and I actually was instrumental in saving that. But if you go back in history, then seeds and sprouting were an essential form of getting proper nutrition. So I suggest you look into this, and there's tons of information online about this. But Ezekiel bread, it's not really a bread per se. It's a mixture of sprouts. And it has 84% of the protein that you need, has amino acids, et cetera. So start to get wise about these types of organic foods, that if you just have that, you'll be doing fine. And like I say, when I was a little kid, we had the potatoes stored up for the winter, the peas, the carrots, and those essential, so then locally we would buy beef and chicken and all the other food. But a lot of our food was already in the basement, already stored there in a cold room. It was like a little, it was a dirt basement, a dirt floor basement for the most part. So probably not a lot of houses have that, but it's easy to store food. And so my next main topic, I'll be talking about food storage. When I was in Peru a number of years ago, I made a major discovery about the Nazca lines, that they were actually antennas. And during that same trip, I spent some time in Cusco, in Lima, and up at Lake Titicaca. Really, it was all over Peru, driving in a car. So I saw it firsthand on the ground. But it's very interesting that the Incas invented freeze drying. And up in the mountains at Machu Picchu, which is an amazing place, when I was there, the day I was there, the guide said that typically it's overcast there. 99% of the time in the day I was there, it was a brilliant blue sky, not a single cloud to be seen. And but anyway, the guide told me that the Incas invented freeze drying. And the way that happened is, up in those high altitudes in the Andes Mountains, it was very dry. And in the wintertime, it would freeze. So they actually developed the process of putting their potatoes in a room, and it would simply dry them out and freeze them. So that's where freeze drying came from. And that's what allowed the Inca Empire to develop to the point where they had extra time on their hands, so that they weren't simply growing food, and that was the only thing they could do. That was they had extra time, so they built the roads, and they had an extensive expansion period where they grew up. They got all the way up into southern Colombia, through Ecuador, down south. They were massive. The Peruvian Inca Empire was massive. The point is, it was because they could grow and store food, primarily potatoes. It's interesting, when you go into a restaurant in Peru, in a restaurant in the United States, they come out and they put a glass of water on the table and then ask you what your order is. In Peru, you go into a restaurant, they come out and they put some glasses of water on the table, and they put a big plate of cooked potatoes in front of you. That's part of the, they have the 24 varieties, or maybe 124 varieties of potatoes. But Peru is a very nice country, very conscious of non-GMO. It is outlawed there. And when you drive around in the countryside of Peru, it's a vast country, very dry, mountainous country. But you come into a valley, and it looks like a valley of paradise. All of the corn, all of the crops growing there, and there's typically a little river that flows through there. That is how they live. You don't find cars or motorcycles in Peruvian towns. They take public transportation or walk. And so they live very close to the land, and it's all hand labor. The cornfields look like it was planted with a machine, but it's all hand labor. But anyway, I'm just wondering if the United States, if we're going to go back to an era like that, where the local farmer, the local produce, or in a big city where the produce is now being raised in what used to be a warehouse. In fact, that was one of the topics I mentioned. I was on the with Robert David Steele a couple number of weeks ago doing some videos, and that's one of the topics we're dealing with actually in the real world, is reconstituting old warehouses into grow facilities using the grow towers and the energy from the wing generator and clean water, et cetera. And so anyway, it's one of the things that you're going to see in the future, but you need the essentials, and one of the essentials is energy, because it's going to take lighting, and you're not going to be able to afford lighting from the electric company. If you are going to run a business based on growing products, your biggest line item cost is going to be energy. So getting back to the idea of local, that is the theme here. And so the local means a number of things. I think that people should have in their own home, apartment, whatever, they should have their own source of sprouts, their own source of growing greens. They should be able to grow even potatoes, something like that, in container, using container gardening principles. I've seen people who have converted their yard in a house in the city. They have a little yard space. They convert it into a garden and produce a tremendous amount of food. And so the last topic is food storage. If you have food, how can you store it for a long period of time, like over winter? And this is something that the pioneers had to deal with. Drying food is one of them. Canning food is another. And I was just talking with on the break here about freeze drying. You can buy freeze dry units and in your own house create freeze dried food from the excess food that you have. And anything is commensurate with freeze drying. And of course, the Power Hour, just to give them a little bit of free advertisement for what they do. Of course, they have the Numana Foods and other very essential items in that vein also. So have a combination of things. Have fresh food, have storage food, have grow towers, have some ability to grow food no matter what your situation. And it was interesting, after I did the show with Robert David Steele, I started getting responses from people, and they were going, you know, I'd like to move out of the city and just live on a farm, just live that simple life and put my time and energy into growing food locally. So I think there's a lot of people of this mindset, and I think one of the things that the coronavirus did is it put the brakes on a lot of people. It made them sit down, which they normally wouldn't do because they were off running around doing all the things that society said we should do. But they stopped and had to put their feet down on the ground and sit in a chair for a while and think, what do I want to do with my lifetime? And I think a lot of people probably came to the conclusion that they were running around chasing a carrot that somebody put in front of their face, and they wanted to change their life. So this is a time when I think there's going to be, in spite of the fact of all the craziness going on at this time, I think these are times when there's going to be a lot of positive good that come out of this, not the least of which is keeping kids out of school. The schools were an absolute disaster. The school systems were an absolute disaster, what they were teaching kids. In fact, a lot of what you see today is a direct result of a failed education system. I mean, there's no two ways about it. What you're seeing today, I will just say it plainly in a fact, what you are seeing today is the result of a failed education system, not to mention a vaccine-damaged youth population. where autism and you're seeing a lot of people with autism problems, et cetera. That's part of this whole issue also. So, and this show is about food, but it's very important. If you're putting good food in your body and you're very concerned about that, you should also be worried about all the other things that other people want to put in your body, like vaccinations, like drugs, like pharmaceuticals, etc. And so the people that really understand health, I'm not talking about medicine or cures or anything like that. I'm just talking about basic health, is that you have to put good food into your body. There are supplements out there if you don't have good food, but why are people taking supplements? Because the food they get is lacking in vitamins and minerals. It's dried out. It's old. That's why the local concept of putting food on the table is very important, because it's fresh. It has, its food content is maximized. If you're getting greens that were cut within the last few hours and eating them, that's about as fresh as you can get. It's not like a plant that came with ammonia fertilizer, which is now considered organic, that crossed maybe 15 state lines, has been sprayed and kept refrigerated so that it is kept at a artificial cold temperature, but still is breaking down just to make it look green. And you buy this, the food products that you're buying in the store might look good, but they have no food content. You could eat a whole bag of apples and not get the food content of an apple that you would eat when I was a kid. When we ate apples when I was a kid, you would still find a worm in the apple. And what that meant is that the apple had not been sprayed. And then eventually you found apples with no worms, and then eventually you found apples with no seeds in them. And so, or, you know, other types of fruit like oranges, et cetera. And so the whole food industry moved away from high quality food to food that looked good and was saleable, that would last a long time on the shelf. So now I think we're turning back to a rapid deployment, the idea of logistics of delivering from small local farmers. And that farmer can make a decent living selling his products, and the customer pays less money but gets a better product. So it's a win-win. And like I say, I don't think the big corporations saw this coming. What their plan was is to take the world down, make everybody dependent on them, the world slave, you know, mentality, and then forever that's the way it would have to be, because you would be totally dependent on big corporations. But that's not what is happening. So the other issue, I like this idea that lettuce, for example, if you're in a closed environment, if you're growing a large amount of lettuce in a grow tower, that's providing oxygen. It's converting the CO2 that you're breathing out and converting it back to oxygen. So it's giving you a green living space besides providing you with produce. And like I say, if you have, a single grow tower in your grow area by the deck or in your apartment or whatever, if you're growing tomatoes and cucumbers and beans and things like that that are vining plants, then you would be picking those on a daily basis. The plant would last for months, and you would be able to get produce off of this for a number of months. And then when you saw that plant subsiding, you would have other plants growing in your starter table to get them producing, so you're not without plants for any period of time. This is the future. This is the way of the future of food. And so what I suggest is, if you are still living in a city, you want to live in a city. I know a lot of people who still are. They're not going to flee the city. They're going to stay there. And although there's a lot of movement going on, I think people are looking for a better life, something that is not hamstrung with corporate profiteering and for for the betterment of large corporations. So that's I think the entire point here is that if you look at civilizations in the past, and I think that's probably the last topic I should cover here, is that we could be potentially in for a worldwide civilization change. And I don't say collapse because I don't personally foresee any major natural disasters on the horizon. Some people are talking about climate increase. Other people are talking about the food shortage that could result from a drop in the global temperature, which has happened in the past based on solar cycle, basically predictions based on retro analysis of previous cycles. So it's, I don't have a crystal ball. I cannot tell you what's going to happen, but it's interesting to see that there's a potential increase in temperature as we come out of an ice age thousands of years ago, and then a potential drop in temperature due to the sun putting out less energy, as has happened in the past. So where it's going to go, I don't know. But out of all of this, one thing is certain, the future of food is going to become local. That's a very important, that's the whole issue here. And I think also the public is becoming aware, like you look at the foundations, if you look at, I was talking about seed production, for example, you have major corporations starting to dominate the seed industry. And so it's very important for people to be able to have access to seeds. I saw a one website that's international in scope, and its entire paradigm is to locate seed sources internationally. And these are big seed sources for farmers, for ranchers, et cetera, on a large scale, and to connect the farmers with seed sources. So that's something that, once again, is very important. When you get to the global scale and the scale of, imagine the amount of seeds that are needed in the world on a given season to plant crops, connecting farmers with seed sources. And so there again, there's an entrepreneur that's been working in that field for years and has developed a database and applications where farmers can identify their seed sources. And these are real seed sources, organic, non-GMO, et cetera. All of these industries are taking shape naturally and without government influence. In fact, one might say that, in fact, the government, if the government got involved in this, it'd probably be the death of the entire industry. So having all of this happen organically by itself without extra influence from big corporations and government who thought everything was going in a different direction, these sub-industries, these home industries are developing, and I believe they're going to emerge on a world basis. I have a picture on my homepage, which you might want to go visit. I'll just put that in here to leave you with my webpage, jmccsci.com. That's seven letters. And I have a picture of a future city. Now, this is a big city where there's high density population. It has energy from the wind. It has clean water and it has food growing. And so it's an organic city, basically. This is the future. And this is where we could be living. You know, the corporate world where you have the sterile city and everything comes in a semi-trailer from who knows where, is delivered to the store where you have to go and buy the corporate product, that world is ending. So it's very good to see that this whole movement towards localized food is one of the most essential things you'll deal with. But take a look at that picture at the top of my webpage and just look at what the future city could be like. And there again, you know, people are working 40-hour-a-week jobs. And what are they doing? In a lot of cases, they're not doing a lot of real work. So I'm really delighted to see these young entrepreneurs creating businesses, creating income for themselves, and helping other people at the same time. And then really, in doing that, it's creating a world that's a much better place to live in. So I see a lot of bright things. A lot of people see, you know, the end of the world coming. I see a lot of positive movement going on at the same time. And so some of the things that happened, the coronavirus and the riots in the street, it's moving people into a realm that I think is very positive. So out of the negativity comes a positive result. We're heading up towards the top of the hour, so I want to thank Daniel for inviting me in today to be the guest host. And the Power Hour has a great audience, very well-informed audience. And so it's always a pleasure to be here, have this time. And this was a two-hour slot, which I hope I made good use of, talking about this entire industry of food, which I'm part of. I'm a little teeny piece of it. But it's a industry that's going to move and really, I think, in a positive direction to help the people. And I believe we're heading into the music at the end of the hour. Once again, this is James McCanney sitting in for Daniel Brigman, the Power Hour, July 2nd, 2020. Thanks a lot.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.